Last week, I said to people who are having problems or are struggling, who need some additional insight or help or connection, feel free to contact me, email, call me. And a fair number of people did. And I learned something rather remarkable for me, maybe not remarkable, but definitely insightful. That a lot of people are really struggling. That a lot of people wake up in the morning with their minds already engaged in fear and insecurity and not knowing how to proceed. That there was enormous noise in people's lives, projections of future fear, anger at old identities. All of this stuff in a way that you might find predictable. But here is the common denominator, and I will share it with you, not to make you guilty, if in fact that could come out of this, but to just alert you to something really, really important. Almost to a person, all of the people I connected with said that they are not meditating. They don't sit. That they're intending to, that they want to, that they know they should, but they don't. And I found that discomforting and discouraging because coming to this class twice a month for however long it lasts is not going to do it. It will not take care of all of your issues and your problems and your struggles and your fear and your inhibitions and whatever else is marching through your life right at this moment. This is not a panacea. This work, labeled by Ruby as work, has a central core. And the central core is a practice, a regular day-to-day practice, minimum 20 minutes, better 30, sitting quietly, sitting still. Rudy would say, sit with a photograph of your teacher, look into their eyes, take a breath into your heart, hold it for 10 seconds, he would say, ask for help to surrender, and watch what happens. Of course, over the course of years, that modulates in some ways. You start to work with different centers, your heart center, your navel center, your third eye, your throat chakra, your sex chakra. All these places start to open and you surrender and you go more deeply and you open up a system of energy centers that start to flow and to deepen your connection to the human experience, to allow you levels of emotion that may be obstructed or may be caught up in fear and bad negative projections that you start to get control over in a way. You start to go and ask for help to surrender, which means not to engage the stuff that's arising emotionally or in terms of your mind and thought and intellectually or in terms of your gut level terror of, you know, human existence. Whatever these things are that are dominating your life, you are not going to get in control of them until you do the work, until you practice. 7 days a week, you sit. And you can do it regularly, like, you know, first thing in the morning, you know, maybe brush your teeth and sit and give yourself that time. And God knows in a pandemic period like this, what, you know, who needs an excuse for finding time, that time is available, and just sit. And I know for many people, it seems like such a waste of time because you're not doing anything. But that's the whole idea. Not doing, just being. And then realizing as you sit and just be, how unstable and unsettled your being is, and how disconnected it is from yourself. How your mind and your being really are very, very much merged together, and your mind is running the show. When your mind runs the show, which is not uncommon in most people's lives, you are a victim of a out of control mind that has never been controlled properly, never been observed from a place where you could begin to consider that you are in charge of it and it's not in charge of you. Most of us are raised with a mind that starts to become an expression of ourself. Ultimately, we identify with the mind, and that is the source of human suffering. Or as Rudy would put it, mind as slayer of the soul. How do you disconnect from your own mind? Well, you sit still and you look at it, you observe it. Now, most of you will think of it as the mind looking at the mind. And in the beginning, it really is that. The mind is looking and watching itself, and it's a noisy background, and it's kind of full of all of your stuff. But when you take that breath, and you hold it in your heart, and you ask for help to surrender, is to break the pattern. And suddenly what happens as you reach inside, and I described this maybe 5,000 times, something opens. And it's like, oh, there's a quietude. There's a still pointedness. There's a observational witnessing of you and your mind. It's not of the mind. It's not a victim of the mind. It's the observer of the mind. And you realize that's really who you are. And then 2 seconds later, the mind is in talking about it and making it worse and making it really difficult. But if you do the practice regularly, you actually develop a muscle. That's what Rudy called it, a spiritual muscle that allows you to go inside and become a louder witness, if you want to use those terms, a greater witness to the mind event. And what happens is the mind starts to realize it's being seen, and gradually the mind realizes it's not in charge, that you can actually go, no, not going there. Sorry, not for me. You have this capacity to release yourself from the domination of this craziness, which in a period like this, pandemic period, there's a lot of noise going on. And for most people, they look for release from that noise in, you know, I say this weekly, in Netflix and in Amazon and God knows what else, you know, alcohol, drugs. I don't know what everybody is actually doing, but it's not the answer. The answer is take a breath, open your heart, go inside and see who is watching this show that you call you. And you will discover that that place is really wonderful. It's really comforting. It's a good seat on a crazy drama. It's like the best seat in the house to watch you. And then you see yourself doing all these things, and then you start to feel, I don't have to go there. When the plot's getting really bad and you say, this is a bad show, you have the ability to go, click, no, not gonna go, not gonna watch the end of that show. Don't have to do it. And you start to form a relationship with this space inside you that has so many names, consciousness, awareness, self, but it is a healing, opening, observational, and emotionally allowing space. And it gives you an enormous level of freedom from your life, from your mind. In the last weeks, I've been talking about this idea of non-reactivity, and that the person we have become was formulated from the moment we were born by reaction to not getting your mother's milk, getting your mother's milk. Happy, comforted, satisfied, uncomfortable, not recognized, not loved, not given to. We start to want one, free ourselves of the other, and it starts really early. Our friends, our brothers and sisters, our aunts and uncles were programmed into becoming this person. Oh, I love this aspect of you. Oh boy, well that becomes dominant. But this is a terrible thing you're doing, bad thing. You start to change your perspective and you begin to build this persona, which is essentially a mind construct. The mind builds this idea of you, how you look, how people think of you, how you're perceived in the world, what you want, what you don't want, what gets you angry. And you live in that endless reactive space, getting angry, hostile. Sometimes the reactivity is what I call, again, nuclear reactivity. You blow up the entire foundation of your life or whole parts of it, and you do such unbearable damage that trying to get back to take a breath and relax and go deep and ask for help to surrender isn't even an issue. It's not even a possibility. You're so out there. Sometimes if you're out there enough and you're in enough pain, yes, this will bring you back. But if you are an occasional meditator once a week, twice a week, and once in a while, you won't have any muscle to do anything. It won't be there to serve you. It just will be something in your mind that makes you think, oh, now I'm a good person. Now I'm a spiritual person for 20 minutes. It's bullshit. It's total bullshit. I mean, not that you're not a good, beautiful person, but trust me, when you live in your mind, you are this ping pong ball of emotion and feeling and ideas and thoughts and all of these things moving around in one direction, bouncing off, reacting, and you're mostly in a state of chaos and misery. Why? Well, because that is pretty much the human condition. Something has led you to this. The amazing thing is, to me, that if you've been led to this, and if you've been here for years or decades, and you're not sitting and haven't been sitting for those years and decades, what's to say? It's like, oh, okay. So in name, you've given yourself an idea of being a spiritual person. In theory, you're a spiritual person. You're working towards something, but you're not. You're not. You're not doing anything. You know, all you're doing is giving yourself an identity that has no authenticity. The authentic being really does the work. In my own journey, being absurdly rigorous for 44 years, I sat every morning, no matter what. I never missed a day, which was like for me a kind of check mark. And I sat every day. Now, as I've explained 1,000 times, at one point after 44 years, I said, this isn't working. I'm not enlightened. I haven't graduated to some higher God knows what space. And I stopped. And 2 weeks later, this awakening took place. And the awakening was, there was nothing to attain. There was nowhere to go. There was nothing to be achieved. That I was already the thing I was looking for, had always been. It was a phenomenal realization. At that point, every day, all day, was meditating. Not sitting, not quieting my mind. I was in an observational space, or if you will, I was a witness to the Bruce life. And I thought it was an extraordinarily major achievement, but as I say far too often, it was a baby step in what has been unfolding over the last 10 years. I can't speak to where I am exactly now with absolute authority, but I can tell you 50 years of practice. And it doesn't have to be 50, it can be whatever, as long as it's sincere and real and deep. But practice, consistent practice, has results. One of those results is the witnessing part of you, which knows you, in a sense, comes from a vast pool of awareness. That the witnessing self is not limited to a closet of you. It is a house full, it is an earth full, it is a universe full of awareness. And that awareness witnesses you. And when it sees how engaged you are in the dance of commitment to all of this, it welcomes you into the larger house of your being. It does not do that if you are an occasional meditator. It sees you as an occasional person who does this on occasion and it goes fine, doesn't condemn you for it, but it does not wake you up to who you are. And so the struggle goes on and the struggle goes on and it will go on until you die, at which point the struggling person will be eradicated and you will not enjoy that. It's much better to let it go piece by piece by piece over the course of your life. But in the end, those who have not surrendered their identity, their sense of self, will, as they return to their true self, have to be pulled away, yanked out of their temporary false bodily idea of who they are. The incredible gift of meditation is you facilitate that process. You just practice every day and you get lighter and lighter and lighter, and they call that enlightenment. And you become more and more aware of your inner knowing, your inner witness, and life becomes this extraordinary, extraordinary observational witnessing of the miracle of being. That's all I can tell you. And I will say again, for me, at this moment in time, I have become an appreciator of, a lover of, a witness of, a devotee to life itself. I have never, ever known more consistent gratitude and love and awe than I know now. And again, I tell you that not to elevate me, because the very feeling that anything is that there's no elevation involved. The very feeling is, I am. And the truth is, we all are. I am no different than, no better than, nothing in me is extolled by this awakening and awareness. It's simply a message, if you will, to this self and to the larger self that you can do this. But it won't happen without practice. Without sitting. It doesn't happen by magic. It doesn't just happen. And if it did just happen, you'd probably be in an institution, because it's such a massive, massive change from the day-to-day, oh my God, I got this, and you go from that to, and nobody will understand that. Nobody would believe it. But it becomes so exquisite. And then, in learning how to not react, the universe does something really interesting. It presents you with everything that you are programmed to react to. This week, my son Ari has arrived here. I love my son Ari, but he is the best button pusher I have ever known in my life. He can get me to react to one thing after another, after another, after another. He knows what to do. He is a master. He's a musician. He knows how to play me. And I have never had a better teacher, because what I have come to in this life is I love my son, Ari, and I do not need to react to any of this stuff. I do not want to react. And not only do I not even have to not react, it's mostly it just doesn't happen. But when reaction occurs, our housekeeper, Marcia, who I love deeply and who is kind of a teacher for me as well, but not in that well, she's just goodness itself, told me a lesson that her son taught her recently. And I have been using it all week and I wanted to share it with everybody. It's one word. The word is pivot. Instead of surrender, instead of get out of the way, instead of let it go, pivot. It's so simple. When the thing that you are reacting to is coming at you, pivot. And it goes right by you. It doesn't have a reaction. It just falls away. When I did Aikido many, many, many years ago, with Michael Galante was in the class. The whole idea of Aikido was to let somebody else's force come at you. And as you let go of it, it goes past you. And instead of meeting the resistance of you and causing the fight to occur and the interaction to occur, when you let their energy go past you, they trip themselves up with the dynamic of their own thrust. And you don't get hit. The great Aikido masters barely move. People come at them and they know exactly how to pivot. And you can do the same thing. You can pivot when stuff's being thrown at you. And who's that stuff going to come from during a pandemic? Well, the person you're living with will be one of the greatest teachers ever. And if you truly pivot and get out of the way, you will be so thankful to them for their continuing teaching that the more you surrender, pivot, let go, you experience the joy of non-reactivity. And this love that comes up, that you feel for the core of your life and everything and everyone in it, starts to go out. And these people you're pivoting from, rather than getting frustrated, start to get freed of their thing, the dynamic that builds the old relationship. And you start to feel that they are experiencing this love. As I say weekly, my love for Blanche at this point is transcendent in ways that I never dreamed of, even when I married her. And I'm just watching what a lifetime of togetherness means and what a lifetime of partnership means. And I have never experienced so much love, ever. My love for my children and for Ari, who's now, as I say, one of my great teachers, is extraordinary. And I know that love is good for him too, and he may absorb some of it, but that's not my job. My job isn't to change him. My job isn't to make him other. My job is to love him as he is and to love each of you as you are. So if you're sitting around not meditating, not working, not doing it, wishing it would happen, whatever your thing is, that's fine. I will not love you less. I really won't. Because I know how hard it is. I know what it is to be committed. I know what effort it takes to really live a spiritual life. And so I'm very acknowledging and forgiving, I have to say. And so you will be loved one way or the other. But it really helps if you can love yourself. It really helps if you can find that inner space, not that's conditioned to love you and learns to love you, but loves you parentally, loves you like your mother loves you, or ideally your mother would love you. It is a powerful inner force, and I cannot acknowledge it enough and say thank you enough and tell you, as far as I can tell from whatever position it is I have arrived at or am moving through, it only gets better. And the love is more exquisite than you can even imagine, really, because the you, it doesn't have the ability to see love at that scale. It's so universal, it's so vast, it's so powerful, and it really does love you. And if you are not open to being loved, well, you'll miss the boat. Or, honestly, when it finally comes for you at the end of your life, you will see it as an annihilating force. You won't embrace it all easily. I've told this story before as well, but a vision I had many years ago, climbing a hill, and Christ was standing on the top of the hill with his arms out, and I have never felt so loved in my entire life, and I was terrorized and ran away. I ran back down the hill. I could not bear to be loved that much because I knew it would totally, totally annihilate me. Now I'm totally on board with annihilation. I'm watching it. I'm watching it happening materially, physically, emotionally, on every level. I'm really getting old, which is the gift and the process. And Blanche and I were talking this morning about her mother, who never meditated a day in her life, but she had a hard life. She was very much a teacher in terms of creating problematic stuff. She arrived at our house one day with her suitcases and said, I'm moving in. I'm not going home. And she moved in for 9 years. Then my dad followed for six. So if you want teachers, they come. But the great thing about Fanny was she lost her mind. She lost her memory. And in the end, this truly beautiful soul that she was right there, just in plain sight. So if you don't meditate, even if you have good intentions, you may have the benefit of what she had, which is the loss of all the stuff that makes you dissonant in your own being. It all went away for her. It may all go away for you. And so that's all fine. And there's no judgment on any level. But I will tell you, which is, I guess, why you're here to hear this stuff, the experience of finally, 50 years or so into the meditative process, what has arisen is that which is there all the time, which is there for you right this second, even as I speak, this oceanic acceptance and love of who you are. Excuse me. That's all I can tell you. And if you're not feeling it, if you're waking up with anxiety and tension and drama, and you know, and if you run to the refrigerator to eat your fourth thing of ice cream, or you take your 10th drink of the day, or you're taking, I don't know, every kind of pill imaginable, if you're doing all that stuff, it's not going to build muscle. It's just going to hide you and keep you distracted from the part of you that needs the work. And you need the work if you want to get to the place of enlightenment, liberation, wholeness, awakening, this phenomenal clarity of consciousness and God consciousness, whatever you want to call it. It is truly there. It is there for you as I speak. It is never not there, but the experience of waking up to it, of realizing it, all those key words that are all part of the spiritual lexicon, every one of them is exactly what it's about. You awaken to it, you realize it, you become lighter in your being, and you will have this thing. And it's not to have it for you because it takes you away. It just reveals itself as having always been in a way that is not just about birth and death, but is always in the greatest eternal sense of possibility. So there we are. So, you know, again, if you all turn this off halfway through, I would understand, because I'm not saying anything I haven't said week by week. I mean, I added the word pivot, and you can thank Marcia Harris for that. She's our housekeeper, and her son Spencer. Pivot, it's a good word. Use it. When you find yourself reacting to your partner's same old, same old, same old, just pivot. You don't have to meet it with your hostility and with your whatever it is. You can change your nature. You can change your day-to-day life. You can change all the stuff that is making you who you are. You can become who you truly are, which is, I promise you, something worth discovering. Any questions? You may have to unmute yourself if there's a question.
Bruce,
yes, George. Is that a question?
Yeah, there's a question. Is judgment the stopping of letting go? I mean, in order to let go, do you have to stop judging?
I think judging is a reinforcement of a state of mind more than anything else. It keeps you in a particular place in a particular kind of identity, and it locks you in. So letting go of judgment is letting go of reaction, really. And that's often what reaction is. It's a judgment of somebody else's failing or insecurity or, you know, pain-inducing aspect. And so you judge them for it, and that protects you, supposedly. It diminishes them, and it creates drama. And it's very common in most of our lives. I mean, I've spent my life doing that stuff. You know, I can judge people quite easily, and I feel superior. I feel cut off. I feel they're diminished, and I feel like I'm in the right place, except I'm shut down. I'm locked in, and they have become something other than a teacher. they have become an adversary. When the adversary or the person you're struggling with is perceived as something that will show you your judgment, your cutoff point, the thing in you that reacts and becomes solidified, when you see them doing that and you don't react, you don't become solidified, you will ultimately look at them as, thank you for that clarity, because I would never have seen this thing in myself. And I have to say, if you have a son like I have, he shows me more about myself than anyone I have ever known.
I have a son
go right in there. And no, and I know you saw your finger went up. I didn't hear what you said, but I know you have.
I said I have a son too. It does the same thing.
it's really interesting what you give birth to in this life, what one gets. And it challenges and challenges and challenges. But if you keep referencing that and you constantly reinforce your rightness and your wholeness and all of that, you may be right, but you lose. You just lose. You lose because you've constructed this separate nature. And it's only as that breaks down and you let it go with the practice that you start to become freer and freer and freer. And again, I think I've been put in a position to maybe be like a few steps ahead to tell you that it's possible that we can go there, you know. And I think that, you know, like Buddha and all these other great teachers, they're a few steps ahead to be able to reference all of this and say, yes, you too. And they're not excluding anybody except Donald Trump, maybe. And I shouldn't really go there, but if you can create a life that is so obstructed, so non-empathetic, so cut off, so selfish and so egotistical and all of that stuff, that this none of this will penetrate, none of it. And that's just that life. But everyone is gonna have to leave that life. And like I keep saying, and like my movie Jacob's Ladder keeps presenting, it's taking off that mantle of who you were to get back to the simple little being that's going to be led up the stairs into your freedom, into the up Jacob's ladder, into your enlightenment. That's a journey of disrobing and taking off and becoming naked and watching all of the demonic stuff that surrounds you to let go of the world. It's a hellish, difficult trip. Better do it piece by piece now. And it's not hard. It just takes a practice. It's work. And it's valuable. And if you do it, beautiful. If you don't do it, so be it. And I'm watching old age hit me, which is really interesting. I'm really feeling it. I'm feeling like my dad and my grandparents. And I'm feeling when I walk up the stairs, when I walk down the stairs, it's like I'm not who I was, you know. And I don't know why it shifted so fast. The operation seems to have some impact on that, but I don't look at it as a bad thing. This is a time that we are all going to go through, and either that time is going to free you from what was and what you think is and what you think is important, and you start to come into a kind of an embrace of the diminishment of you, And it's really interesting. That's all I can tell you. I got miles to go, maybe. I don't know, but it feels like it. And I'll report from the front lines as I go along. But the basic reality of this journey is that it is into nothingness and that we come from nothingness. And if you're really doing the work, you will recognize that before the time comes where it reveals itself completely. But we're all heading back into that nothingness. And it's a beautiful space. It's a comforting space. It's just like going off into dreamland as you go off to sleep. It has that exact same feel. You just give yourself over and you do it like that all day long. It just takes you in, it takes you in, and you just feel this kind of, and you live like that. And when people throw their shit at you, you don't open up to take their shit. You just, it just goes by. It's like not, it has no resonance at all. And you're free. You're free of that. And it's, I'm just going to say, it's a better place to live. That's all I can say. Okay, I'll take any other questions, but I worry that I'm just getting so repetitive. Well, okay. I'll figure out next week. It may be California next week. Maybe I'll start because it's going to be the new year. And Blanche. Yeah.
Did you ask for a show of hands?
I did, honey. You're not going to like it.
I remember you did.
Just before you got online, the predominant number of hands was alternating weeks. So you and I can talk about it privately, and if in the end you really don't want to do that, I'll defer. But the predominant idea was boom, 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 boom. So. We'll talk, but so anyway, Happy New Year. You know, everything you look at in the newspapers and magazines today is, you know, getting rid of 2020 and looking toward 2021. Really, you know, of course, it's just one day going into another day. And who knows what this year has, what it has in store for us. But I will tell you, if you find this place in yourself that is eternal, the year-to-year movement will not affect you in the same way. You just won't be as drawn into that drama, because it will be drama one way or the other. The world is drama. Yin and yang are in endless interaction. And it's only when you surrender that they don't pull you into the drama. So good practice. Happy New Year. Love you all. Happy.